It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
All right, what's the report from outside?
I was outside for maybe 3 minutes. I counted 8 Q-tips. It's got to be one person that just throws their Q-tips out the window when they're done using them in their cars.
It's Mike Shope.
One person?
More than one person using Q-tips and throwing them outside?
I don't think I use 8 Q-tips in a year.
I think I've never used 8 Q-tips.
And the Bulldog.
What the hell is going on out there? I don't think I want to work in a place where people like roll their windows down if they're using Q-tips for Lord knows what and just throw them on the ground.
Well, you do.
What, is it the 70s?
Oh, that's not very nice.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Driving on the highway 65 miles an hour. I get a little left in my soda from the fast food drive out the window. Yeah. That was the 70s. Who gives an F about anything?
Throw a burrito out the window.
Nothing matters. 2025, what are you doing?
On WGR.
Throwing Q-tips out of your car.
Sports Radio 550.
2025. Isn't that amazing? There is a throwback reference right there. If anybody has been with us for long enough. Isn't that amazing? It's 2005. Is that the line?
Yes. Yes.
John Sterling?
I assume it's a direct quote from him. That's the line you've always used.
I've always used it.
Referencing
it. It's hilarious to me. Isn't that amazing? It's 2005. Okay, I saw a Q-tip and I texted you immediately a picture. I took a picture next
Delaware.
To my car in Delaware.
Yeah.
So we're not the home office necessarily of
right.
Q-tip.
Right.
You know, litterers. I just made up a word. Sigmund Bloom with us now on the West Her Hotline. Sigmund, here we go. Not that you know, it's not a 12-month-a-year endeavor for some of us, but for most, for normal people, no offense. Fantasy football has arrived, would you say?
Yeah, no offense taken.
Good.
And I was saying earlier today on a show that, you know, before week one, it's like the click, click, click before the first hill on the roller coaster. Right now, we're just having a conversation in line, waiting to get on the roller coaster.
Right, trying to figure, do I have a shot at the front? How long is the line in the front? Like, should I
hearing them scream somewhere? Ooh, what's that going to be that's going to make us scream?
Right on. You know, Sigmund, why not start with quarterback here in our conversation today and Josh Allen? I probably, over the years when we've talked, tried to sort of like, you know, with some nuance, well, okay, let's get into some more interesting positional value type ideas, whoever that is for the Bills. I mean, post-Diggs, they haven't really had the receiver that you needed to have. But Allen seems to be, this year in drafts, kind of on his own tier. And I read something from you recently where you were like on board, you know, like maybe this is going to be, it was maybe something that Tyler Dunn had in a podcast, you know, like just, that was it. Like this bigger year might be out there for Allen. Are you banking on that?
I would. And really, for fantasy football, this can be a bit of a conundrum because I like quarterbacks all the way down to like the 20th quarterback off the board. Like, I'd be fine going in to battle with Malik Willis and Baker Mayfield. But at the same time, fantasy football is about having more points than your opponent. And Josh Allen in the third round, especially if you have a scoring system where you get, you know, long touchdown bonuses or 300-yard bonuses or point per 20 pass yards. You have, where quarterbacks have PPR leagues, where quarterback scoring is really well ahead of the pack, I'm having trouble justifying passing on Allen because he was playing on a broken foot last year. He had no number one receiver to talk about. And listen, Matt Harmon, my buddy over at Yahoo Sports, I call him my nephew. And I love that he can say, well, Josh Allen told me I don't really care about route running. I just want them to get open. And that's DJ Moore. You know, DJ Moore had his career year with Justin Fields. What do you think he can do with Josh Allen? And then they basically made his guy, his rabbi, the head coach. So everything tells me this is basically Josh Allen's team, and we haven't seen what he can do when he has that kind of freedom and control.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you're saying. I hope they deliver it.
You know, I hope they do sort of turn more over to him, which I know sounds a little nutty because a lot of the narrative around the Bills, Sigmund, for the last 3, 4, or 5 years has been really not that long, ever since Diggs left, I guess, mostly, is that they're leaning on him too much. It's like he's got to do everything, but I feel like maybe more passing and more downfield passing is what I have in mind when I think of that. Like, feature the passing game. Like, lean into what you have here instead of, you know, I mean, I love his running. It's incredibly valuable. But, man, if they could get a few more 20 to 40-yard passes down the field, I mean, that's only going to increase his longevity, I would think.
And the clip that Mike was referring to, the Ty Dunn clip, was about how are they going to dial him back a little bit after that turnover against Denver. And he was saying no, and he cited, I think, a really important point. Sean McDermott's a defensive head coach. He's going to think of the game plan overall in a defensive-minded way. And teams really take on the personality of their head coach and their quarterback. And McDermott maybe was a little bit of a wet blanket on what Josh Allen could do if the team had his personality. And let's remember, Joe Brady coached DJ Moore in Carolina, and he was the architect of the offense that Joe Burrow basically had the best season in college football history. So he's going to let Josh Allen play, and for fantasy football, that's got to be good.
If you're drafting a lot, I guess, I mean, if you're definitely pro-Allen, like you're sounding, Sigmund, and, you know, also somebody that is willing to wait at quarterback, you got to kind of force it, I think, this year, where it's in the third round, and maybe it comes down to how much you like those other options in the third round, because they're not all awesome.
Right.
It's maybe a little bit soft.
Exactly. Like, am I really going to say, oh, Breece Hall or somebody that, you know, the reason they're in the third round is because there are questions where Josh Allen, like you said, he is in a tier of his own. Nobody denies that. Another thing I'll throw into the mix here is Dalton Kincaid actually having a legitimately healthy offseason. What does that look like? You know, I don't want to jinx him, but I think this is really exciting. James Cook used more as receiver. Carmichael. All of these things lead back to Josh Allen.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to ask you about Cook. Like, if you're bullish on the pat, but the passing game is a wrinkle there. We talked some about this on our show yesterday, Sigmund. But if you're bullish on Allen's numbers and it being more pass heavy, what does that do to Cook for you? Are you, like, avoiding him because you think a dip is coming after leading the league in rushing last year?
No, I would say just the opposite. If you're sitting at sixth spot, the drafts in typical PPR leagues are going something like Gibbs, Bijan Robinson, Jamar Chase, Puka Nacua, and then that's where you're thinking about Christian McCaffrey, and I'm not going to talk anyone out of Christian McCaffrey, but somewhere after that, or if you don't want McCaffrey, I know someone would say Jackson Smith and Jigba here, but I think you know, the defenses are going to try to take him away first and foremost. I James Cook's an excellent pick. You know, I'm in the pros versus Joes. Mike, are you doing pros versus Joes this year?
Yeah, next Sunday night, yes.
Well, I'm in the eighth spot, and I'm going to call my shot here and say if James Cook is there, that's probably who I'm taking.
All right.
And because first it was touchdowns. Oh, well, what if Josh Allen bogarts all the touchdowns? Mm-hmm. Well, that happened last year. Cook had a drop-off in touchdowns. Then, like you said, he was just the rushing champion. And he was originally drafted Dalvin's little brother mm-hmm. because of his receiving skills.
Right.
You know, that was kind of the headline. So, yeah, he can do it. He can be that number three running back behind the or number four, assuming McCaffrey stays healthy. And it's a good player and a good offense. Sometimes it's just that simple.
That eight spot, 8, 9, 10, that's the sweet spot for me in these drafts this year, is maybe even as far as 10. Because who are your options? You know, you mentioned a couple, and that includes Smith and Jigba if the running backs go, which is great, I think. But you've got, you know, Jenty and, mm-hmm. you know, even Achan, and then Jefferson and Lamb. Holy cow, they're not even picked before that this year.
Right.
You're going to get two of those guys. If you're picking 10th, you're going to get two of those guys. So I think that's probably – I pick first this mm-hmm. year in pros versus Joes, which I think will probably be Bowers in tight end premium. But I think –
I endorse that.
You do? Okay, that's good to hear. But 10 – 10's pretty rich. 9-10 this year for me.
Yeah, well, and hey, I like to say every strategy works if you take the right players. but I do agree with you. You know, a guy like CeeDee Lamb was a player we're taking in the top 4 or 5 until he had a couple of injury-riddled seasons. So that makes a lot of sense. And then I do think there's a drop-off somewhere around 15 to 18. You know, I'm glad, honestly, that at 8 – I have a better shot of getting, say, Drake London or Kenneth Walker, because somewhere around the end of the second round, I think there's a drop-off where there's a plateau and the value stays similar all the way into the fourth round.
And I know this about you, or I think I do. You don't want Barkley.
No. And, I mean, this is interesting because I was really using it more to endorse Javonte Williams. But, look, I think there are three offenses, Baltimore, Washington, and Philadelphia. They're all putting first-time play callers, first-time offensive coordinators. I think between the three of them, there's 6 years of coaching experience. Or, I mean, Declan Doyle maybe has three or four. But the point is that there's a lot of hopium. I know that Kevin Petula was terrible for the Eagles, but look, this is a team that had their legendary offensive line coach, Jeff Stoutland. He's not with the team anymore. They traded away their best wide receiver. They're switching to more outside zone running, which is not Saquon Barkley's forte. He was studying Todd Gurley to try to, you know, do a bit of a software update for the outside zone running. Tank Bigsby, honestly, is going to look better in that mode of the running game. And they're putting Jalen Hurts under center. And a lot of stuff we heard in the offseason is he didn't want to be there. I mean, who's to say this is going to work? Who's to say this is going to be any better than last year whenever Saquon Barkley, I think, was running back 17?
Yeah.
So I know he had that great year a couple of years ago, but I feel like he's swimming upstream this year again.
With Sigmund Bloom, the excellent footballguys.com. I do a lot of my research and reading of fantasy football on that site. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. Back to DJ Moore then. Is he a steal at the 5-6? Are you like, you know, if you're this way about what this is all going to add up to, I think you'd probably really want him.
Yeah, I think between Cook, Allen, Moore, and Kincaid, you don't want to miss out on all four, and pairing up two or even three of them, I'm okay with that. There's other attractive wide receivers around that time. Like if you said it's DJ Moore or Mike Evans, ooh, that's tough. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're super excited.
Davante Adams.
Now, Davante Adams I'm out on. I think the fact that the Rams were so eager to try to find a number three wide receiver, they were in on A.J. Brown. And I still think the Rams are a team that's very likely to trade for a receiver at the trade deadline. You know, I think this is an all-in team, and I think they've given us a lot of signals that Davante Adams was basically a goal line back for them. And I think that they know that he's not the player he once was. Terrence Ferguson becomes really interesting at the end of drafts because of that. The tight end, could he be basically a number three receiver while they try to figure this out, because they definitely wanted to improve their wide receiver group in the offseason.
You mentioned Kincaid. How much attention will you and everyone that's, you know, in this field be paying to how much he practices, like the injury? I know you got to do that with everyone, but Kincaid is especially like I'm hyper focused on how healthy he is. He's had two, if not three, years of just leg problems. I think it's two, and just it feels like it's one or the other. Either they are too crowded in the part of the field they want to use him, so his snaps are limited, or he's so one-dimensional they only feel like they can put him on the field in passing situations that are absolutely passing situations, and that's it. The snap count to me has got to go up at some point. I just don't know if he's ever going to be healthy enough to do it. Maybe this is the year.
You're right, Bulldog. You're right to focus on that. And if we see him practicing regularly, then I know we joke about best shape of his life, but really this is the best shape of at least his NFL life. And his first five games, he came out of the gate, and snap count or not, when he's on the field, he's on the field to be a target. So it's routes run, or even the percentage of the times that he's targeted on his routes run. And I think that what he did in those first five games only increased the trust that, and you know, it also created bigger plays in the middle of the field, and DJ Moore is going to help with that also. So all of these things tell me that if he's healthy, he's going to be a top five fantasy tight end like he was while he was healthy last year. It was only when his snap counts, his injury needed to be managed. Now on the other side, if we hear he tweaks his knee in practice and he's out for a couple of weeks, we're right back where we started.
Right.
Tight end for me, I'm trying to think of some needless comparison to like being at a farmer's market or something. Like there's always something good. Almost always. Like in the middle, it can get a little sketch, but Bowers, McBride, Loveland, Warren, Fannin, Pitts. Like, there are each round into Kincaid territory, Tucker Kraft, Laporta. As you go through the draft, it seems like there's always, and in FFPC where they host pros versus Joes, you get a point and a half per catch at that position, which ups everybody. And then you even mentioned Ferguson. I can't shut Davis Maddock up about Ferguson and Gunnar Helm and these guys at the end. So a little bit less so in the middle, like round 11 or thereabouts. But, you know, even Jake Ferguson is somebody that you can talk yourself into as a prize. So tight end is one where, maybe this is always true, Sigmund, I would defer to you on this, is one where it's really maybe just more about, like, all right, how much do you want to invest in the position versus what else is out there? How do you like to play tight end this year?
You're right to say be flexible. There's a lot of potential right answers. Same thing goes for quarterback. Same thing goes, honestly, for wide receiver. I think running back is the one position where you don't want to have to count on both of the classic zero running back strategy. I just think that you're really potentially in trouble, especially with Jonathan Brooks. He's going to be coming up the board now. And what I mean by that is not taking a running back, say, in the first five or six rounds. But otherwise, you can be patient. You can let the draft come to you and know as you pass sort of like exits on the freeway, okay, well, I just passed the George Kittle, Dalton Kincaid exit. So like you said, the next one up might be, Jake Ferguson or Mark Andrews. Whatever it is your plan is, you can be flexible. And one of the things I want to really stress while I've got your wonderful audience attention is look at that first three or four rounds of your draft, and you're getting an insight into the psychology of the people you're playing with, and then you can anticipate. You know, you can kind of put a chip down on the table of, hey, they're going light on running back. I feel like I could take a value running back right now, but they'll probably be values three or four rounds later too, because what they did in the first few rounds is going to show you how your draft might be skewed. So I think, again, that flexibility gives you the ability to adjust based on what you learn early in your fantasy football draft.
I like this farmer's market thing.
You with me? Don't buy the first green pepper.
The fruit and vegetables don't look so great. Oh, look, there's a bakery. Oh, a brewery. Oh, a wood-fired pizza place. All right, I'm good.
and no explosive diarrhea either.
Right. I might go the other order there, but yes.
Whatever.
That point you just made also really applies to quarterback too. Like you talk about these expert tournaments. I mean, experts are so excited to push quarterback.
Yeah.
They just hate drafting one, you know? I was watching the ship chasing guys, my buddies there, have a main event draft, and they couldn't say no to Jaden Daniels. And one, maybe Jacob Sanderson, one of them said, you know what's going to happen. You know what's going to happen. It's going to be three or four rounds from now, and we're going to see all the quarterbacks. We like them all, but we already did it. And so, I mean, you don't want to be shut out on a guy, but I think that's one where the top players like to just sort of flex their muscle by waiting, you know. I mean, I've done this. I've got Jalen Hurts in the ninth round, Daniels in the ninth round. Like, oh, it feels strong like bull. Look at me. I've got, you know, these picks. But then, you know, you could even, you mentioned Malik Willis, Sigmund, you could even wait longer and be okay.
Right. I call it taking the tank to E, you know. Let's see who can really get it all the way down before we see a gas station. It's a summertime road trip time, right? And the point is, that, like, the way you described it, how Jacob described it, that you're foregoing the opportunity to take values later. So you can do a test when you're on the clock of, am I okay with, I mean, this is what our football guy, the draft dominator football guys basically does for you. It's thinking ahead and telling you, you better pick this position because next time you're up, this position is going to dry up or this other position still has viable options. And you can say that about a quarterback through your entire draft.
Right.
Now, in certain scoring systems, 6-point pass touchdowns, you know, quarterback is more important and it is a high scoring position. But I think that especially in these big field tournaments where you're trying to have the best team out of thousands and not just 12, taking Trevor Lawrence or taking Jared Goff, who has one outdoor game between week 5 and 16, you know. I mean, you can put together a quarterback through like Frankenstein parts with Jared Goff. Maybe you just look at the games. I just gave him an article idea. Like, look at the games where you wouldn't want to play Goff, find someone with the best schedule, say in the quarterback 15 to 25 range, and just pair those up, and you might get the same kind of production. So creativity at quarterback is something you don't have the luxury to do, say, at running backs. So stock up on running backs and wide receivers early, and kick quarterback down the road. But, you know, the nature of fantasy football is if you say, no, I'm taking Josh Allen in the third round, that's also a potential right answer.
Man, Goff is living well. Last year he had like a whole season where he only played indoors almost. Somehow these division Lambeau and Soldier Field come at the bookends of his schedule. He's got that – you said it, the stat where like the bulk of the season he's only playing indoors, and the one outdoor game he has in that stretch is in Miami. So you don't have to worry too much about Goff. One, we have a couple minutes here, Sigmund, if you do. One player not only is an interesting one, but even like right now with some news yesterday, is Malik Nabers, where you know there's a super high ceiling if the offense clicks, especially because of how great he was as a rookie. But most people have been drafting like they don't expect him to play right away. Yesterday, the Giants said, or it was reported anyway, that he would likely not start the season on the PUP list. Does that do anything for you?
Not really. I think that, number one, that's not confirmed. You know, he has to pass his physical.
Okay.
Number two, I'm not hearing a strong change in the tenor of will he be 100% to start the season? And what I mean by that is no one's saying he's 100% going to play week one. So I still think that based on what we were hearing, guys, as early as like March, there seemed to be murmurs coming out of the Giants like, yeah, Malik Nabers recovery, you know, that's not a sure thing. And we then had heard, you know, there was some additional issues. And when you know that, that's something that until we actually see him without restrictions on a practice field, it's hard to just dispel that. And guys, I'm not so sure about Jackson Dart and Matt Nagy and John Harbaugh. I'm not sure. Remember, on the play that Nabers got hurt, if Dart has a weakness, it's throwing downfield on the sidelines. And that play was like a ball, I think it was a ball that was errant going over the sideline, and that's when Nabers got hurt. Like, I'm not really sure even the Nabers strengths and Dart strengths line up. And I'm not sure that the Giants offense is going to look smooth out of the gate anyway. So I'm probably not taking Nabers unless I see him fall into the fourth round. Now, that's not going to happen.
When is your pros versus Joe's draft?
Sunday night.
This Sunday night.
At 8 o'clock Eastern. It's the first one. I love getting in the first one, Mike, because I want to get in before anybody has any track record of other drafts. And I think that it's a chance to – one last chance to get the draw.
Love it. Pete Overzet is in that one. FFPC, Eric Balkman, they stream all of them. Which I being vain like I am, I have to watch. I have to have it on when I'm drafting, and then I have to watch it immediately back after I'm done. I've often done that, honestly. And Sigmund is kind of the GOAT in that tournament. Very good. Well, I loved your energy today. Always a treat to talk to you, Sigmund. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Yeah, absolutely. You guys too. And I always look forward to this. I mean, I feel like, guys, we've been talking for at least a decade. I hope we can do it for at least another decade.
I can't place the year because it's a preseason game. If it were a regular season game, I would know.
Right.
But my first time was in the booth at the Bills before a preseason game, like week one, Thursday
and
night.
I think I was on the beach. Or maybe the year after that. And guys, you've been on the air with me. I've been on the air with you when I was in a car accident when my wife was driving. You remember that?
Yes.
I mean, we've had quite the set of memories together.
I've had a time. Yes. Indeed.
I've been on the couch. Maybe we both end up on the couch together. Bulldog and I both as sort of like a round table.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's make it happen because you know we all could use some therapy.
Ten more years. I'll sign up for sitting here when I'm 71, I suppose.
You said that. What, you're on the air.
What else am I going to do?
Okay. That just was set.
It's only so much. Like, what did Dick say? It's only so much golf you can play.
Right. There's a Friday news dump right there.
Yeah.
Thank you, Sigmund. All the best.
Great pleasure. Thanks, guys.
Sigmund Bloom, footballguys.com. Pros versus Joes. I'm partnering with Davis Maddock, by the way. I don't think I mentioned that. I sort of like just took it on myself.
Mm-hmm.
But we are. And he's going to stream our draft next Sunday night on his channel. Because I don't know how to do that. I don't have a channel. I just have friends. Like boats. I don't have a boat. I have friends with boats. I don't have a channel. I have friends with channels. So, saves me from having to do like
That's a good way to go.
The lifting part.
Provided you get the invite to get on the boat every now and then.
Yeah, you got
to
get the invite.
You got to get the invite.
That's right. You got to, you know, keep up those relationships. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here at 803-0550. Lines are open. Let's go. We'll talk some more after sports. This is WG.
when you start out the first few practices, it's almost like June. It's almost like mandatory mini camp. And so I kind of stay still watching the skills at that point. But once we get the pads on, I go to the, you know, O-line, D-line, and 9-on-7, because that's where the game's played. It's played in, you know, in the trenches, and you've got to be good there or you're going to probably struggle. And so I try to get to really evaluating those guys.
Bills GM, or what is it now? President of Football Operations, or vice something I should know? Brandon Bean with Pat McAfee.
It's a big fancy title. I'm honestly not positive of the wording.
Can I settle for GM? I don't want to be. I'm not trying to condescend.
Can I settle for that? Sure. He definitely is the GM, but he definitely is something else on top of that. So you're not going to be wrong calling him the Bills GM.
No, but the higher title should come in first.
Right.
So it would be the .. and general manager.
Right. It is president of football operations.
There it is.
Right, you were right.
Nailed it.
All right.
PFO. POFO.
You gotta get the pads on. Wait till the pads come on.
The pads.
The pads start popping. Wait till the pads start popping. Hey, you know what I can't wait for? I can't wait to hit somebody in a different colored jersey.
Which they'll do. Not only in games, but also in Cleveland. They'll go to Cleveland.
That's what I mean. Yeah.
That'll be the line.
It'll be good to get out there against somebody in a different colored jersey.
You sound like you're in regular season shape.
There's been reps.
I mean, so many years of it. You do it with your eyes closed.
Yeah, pretty much.
Not that that even changes anything.
Right.
Try saying that with your eyes closed.
Right now my eyes are closed. I sound the same with my eyes closed.
I can't wait to hit some people in different color jerseys. It's easy. No sweat. How about this point? Sigmund Bloom suggested it, and I feel like as we get closer to the season, this is becoming more and more frequently said. In his words, the idea of Sean McDermott as a wet blanket on the offense. I think maybe one of Sigmund's other favorite phrases is the drumbeat of the offseason. You know, like there's momentum toward certain players playing prominent roles or whatever gets said, you know, the drumbeat. I think the drumbeat started and will probably continue in this direction. The idea that Brady was constrained. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. It seems a little bit too easy.
Yeah.
It may be unfair to McDermott.
It may be, but it also, however much he, I mean, it certainly was, I think I made this point earlier in the week, like the first moment of this season where it sounded, last season, I should say, that it sounded like maybe things weren't super peachy between Bean and McDermott. Was when McDermott wanted to push back on what his reputation appeared to be about what we all know you want to run the ball. Hold it. I never said exactly that, you know. But it might be unfair. It's a convenient narrative. He's the guy that's gone. They haven't thrown the ball like crazy. They haven't had a number one receiver. Everybody eats all this stuff. And if you want to pin it all on him, you might be right to do that. But even if he is balking at that while he's still here and trying to sort of set the record straight, the way that he is perceived by the people who work with him can have an impact. This can happen. I don't want to compare like the head coach to being a parent and talking to your children, but sometimes you can say the thing gently and appropriately and still not exactly be heard because you're the one saying it. And the preconceived notion of the listener is that you don't like this thing. So even though you're telling me, like I'm just imagining a conversation, you know, not during a game or anything, but like on a Wednesday or a Thursday where the game plan is being put together and, you know, they're talking and McDermott says, no, I'm fine if you want to throw on first down all these times or whatever the plan is for the first 15 plays, scripted or whatever. But even if he endorses it, I could still see someone in Brady's shoes going like, I don't think he really wants that though. You just sort of assume because of someone's reputation and maybe how they've sounded other times to you. It just, I think that could have even been, I don't want to say subliminally necessarily, but like just subconsciously, you could, it's kind of the same thing. If you're Brady, you might have felt like I don't want to do too much of one thing. And maybe that's pass the ball. We are running it well. We've got a good line. You know, you're not going to turn it over likely if we keep running it. And, you know, you might just sort of fall into a role, not setting out to be a pleaser, but to be a pleaser. I want to make my boss happy. So I'm going to try to do this in a way that will get me that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of that can be the fault of the listener, Brady, in this case, making assumptions, you know, and not really hearing the words that are being told to you. So I think his reputation, he was here so long, and there is a lot of, you know, stuff that I think, like I admired McDermott, especially the last few years, because I think he really did try to evolve. I think he was conscious about what his flaws were and what his reputation was. And I think he made strides to try to change that. But sometimes those preconceived ideas are hard to shake for the people around a person like that.
I think separately, why is there this particular drumbeat, if that's the word for it, is because the Bills would want, not in a really critical way, but they would, that's the message they'd want out. I mean, there's always this, there's some level of uncertainty about Brady, about the new coach. He's walking into some pretty big shoes here. And I mean, here's Bean talking, like anybody could be this. He can be defensive about kind of what you got promoted and McDermott got fired. You know, fans are kind of low on him maybe for any time since he's been here. So what you'd want, not that they're talking to Sigmund necessarily, but what you'd want to have people think, and this, I think, listen for this once we get into camp, you know, whether it's through Sal or other people in the media, they're going to talk like, not all of them, but I think this is what the Bills want you to think, is that Brady couldn't really, as good as we were,
mm-hmm.
I mean, he wasn't a completely ridiculous choice or anything. I mean, they had a top offense. But, you know, really, we could have been something else or something more. I think also what's interesting about this, so imagine for a moment that you're him, that you're Brady. And, here it is. Here's your big chance. And you have a big advantage for these things with Allen as your quarterback. Like you're starting off at a great point. You go to Houston the first game. And if there's any team in the NFL where you might not want to do the thing that lots of people want from you.
You might
which
not
is
want
like push it.
You might not have Allen standing in the pocket for 4 seconds 40 times in this game.
At Houston is maybe right. The worst draw you right. could get in the NFL.
Right.
I mean, Seattle, maybe. You're going into, and the Bills have had a tough time in Houston. Like, you're going into a stadium where they can raise hell. And, okay, well, I kind of want to prove to everybody that I'm not just a James Cook fiend, you know? Like, I know that Allen is great, and I want to – we have DJ Moore. That's a big investment, and I want to go get it.
It is a great opportunity for him to really sort of flex. Because if he can come up – I mean, they got
– if it works.
Right. They got handled there. Maybe one of the worst overall performances by the offense. I mean, forget about the stats. Just watching the game, they couldn't function mostly. Like, Allen was just under constant duress.
Bulldog, it's 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
In that stadium.
Right. But the game 2 years ago did not even look and feel. I know the stats, that's why I made the point about the stats. The stats from the game 2 years ago are way worse, Allen's anyway.
9 for 30.
Than they are. But I felt like the game last year was a worse beating. Like, it just, they got handled. And so, all right, let's see what you got, hotshot. You're the new head coach. You're the play caller. Like, let's see the antidote to, you know, maybe the most elite set of pass rushers in the league, not to mention all the other talent just all over that defense. The corners are great. I mean, they're just loaded. So what are you going to do? You know, how are you going to slow that down? You know, that might be, I mean, it might be all game. It's funny that it's the first one where swinging the ball to Cook or just using Cook as a receiver is a really good idea. That usually comes out fast. That can offset a pass rush. And that might be like that's a very base level analysis, but it's one piece. Brady could construct something that he could get a lot of credit for. Like if they look like anywhere near the opposite of what they looked like there last year, boy, he'd get a lot of run for that. I mean, they got to do it. That's the hard part, but that's the gig. Like I got to figure out how to make us not look like the far inferior team on the field, which is really what they looked like in that Monday night game.
Yeah, Thursday night last year.
Thursday night, sorry.
Yeah, still, you're right. They scored early last year in Houston. Cook broke one for 6-0. They missed the kick. But that's their only offensive touchdown in
that
game.
You're right. Davis had a kick return.
Yep. And then field goals.
And they were, you know, 14 first downs. They had a look at it late still, even with all that. So it's not like they got beat by 30. You know, this wasn't the Colt game from whatever year, 21. You know, they still had a chance, even with all the trouble that they had. Mm-hmm. So if he can stabilize that and just like trying to stay on time, sorry to be so football-y.
Ball knower.
But, oh, great, let's chop it up.
That's your slap on the wrist for when you do that.
Here come all the ball knowers to chop it up. Can you just speak English like a normal person, please? Would that be okay? Anyway, I'm done. I don't need to keep going on the point. I've made the point.
Ball knower. Who doesn't love a ball knower?
Me.
Except for you.
I love people who know football.
You do? Generally?
Sure. Yeah.
The Bills in that game in Houston, down 4, final 2 minutes, 4th and 27. Hook and ladder,
right.
Palmer to Shakir, and they get to 3rd and 1 at the 17. Touchdown wins it. Incomplete for Shakir, false start, and then a pick is how that game ended against Davis Mills and the Texans. It would have been Stroud the year before.
Yeah. Pretty sure, yeah.
That's the week after they lose in Baltimore?
Yes.
And Allen is 9 for 30 in Houston. Man, it's like his number one kryptonite place, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
Where else would it be? He's won in Arrowhead a bunch of times. He's won in Miami like it's his backyard.
Yeah.
New England, last year, even they're down 21-0 and win that game in New England. Where else would it be? Won in Pittsburgh more than once.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Cincy, it's one loss and the Hamlin game. I think Houston is the one where,
yep,
as a rookie, he got hurt there.
He got hurt there. Then they make the playoffs, and he's all
the
like, sugar
game.
High. Like, I mean, not that he was terrible the whole game, but still. Like,
was he 0-4?
That's not a good memory, I think, for Bills fans, thinking of how he played in that. Well, you still think of it. Anytime he looks sort of frantic, the fumble at the end of the half in the Denver playoff game is Houston. Like, what are you doing? Why are you trying to do too much? Time is running out. You're in your own end. You're running around, one just holding the ball out, dying for it to get taken from you. Like, dude, get it together.
So he'd be 0-4 there? They beat Houston here in his career, but
I think that's right. Yeah, I don't think they've...
Rookie year, they lost. He got hurt. They lost late with Peterman in that game, the playoff game,
right.
And then each of the last 2 years. Wow. That's week 1. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog back after this timeout. This is WGR.